Our topic this morning is doing the good. This is what Unitarian Universalism is about, lives of character. This is the mission of our particular church, to inspire people to transform our world. Now, here's the honest truth. Most of the time, it's pretty easy to do right. I mean, most of us are taught by our dads and our moms, by our teachers and by other mentors and examples, by our friends. We're taught to do right and to want the right things, to practice good manners, to be kind and help others. Despite temptations, we mostly want to follow our conscience, and mostly we do. David's father teaches him these kinds of lessons, and he's a giant. But he teaches grown-ups to pay attention to kids, and he teaches not to steal, and he teaches to bind up wounds with care. Not that all this teaching is easy. All of us who are parents of young children or remember being parents of young children, I think, know that this is a constant effort. Little kids don't understand that you're not supposed to lie or whine to get what you want or take something from another little kid. You've got to teach them time and time again, and it can be spiritually and emotionally exhausting. Can I get an amen? Any fathers or mothers today? Yeah. But it's important work, and it pays off, and we do learn to do good. We do have a conscience, and if society is reasonably structured to punish those who break the law, then we learn to resist temptations. As we get in the habit of doing good, it becomes easier. We come to see ourselves as the kind of person who works for justice, so we do. We see ourselves and we want others to see us as the kind of person who gives to charity, who is loving and compassionate, and so we act that way and we become that person. A little positive peer pressure can be a good thing. Structures of accountability, friendships with others, help us expand our capacity for empathy, our ability to see the world through the eyes of others. And through religious inspiration and through spiritual experience, through good living, we come to love the good, come to love the beautiful world and wish it to be more so, come to see our own life as in service to the beautiful world and the beautiful life, and so we do more good in the world. So long as we're taught well and we learn, and so long as we love the good, and if we live in a society that's reasonably well structured, it's not too hard, really, to do the good. Except there are certain things that get in the way, right? Whenever I hear a sermon or read about how we should do this or that, or how we can do the good or live this way or that, I think to myself, What about, I bet you think that too. What about ambiguity? When the choices aren't clear and we don't know what's right. What about addiction? When we want to stop but we can't. We feel trapped or caught in the grip of a need. What about adversaries? What about when others have a different vision and fight against us? So that's the sermon for today. How do we do the good in the face of ambiguity, addiction, and adversaries? Maybe there are other things that get in the way, things that don't start with the letter A, but that sermon's going to have to wait for another day. I do think these things, ambiguity, addiction, and adversaries, are the big three. The major things that I hear about from folks who are trying to do the good, things that get in the way. So, ambiguity. Ambiguity is a big deal. It's not always clear what the right thing to do is. And yet, we seem to live in this era where we can't admit that we don't know for sure. Everyone is always so confident. It's considered a political disaster to admit that you made a mistake or even that you have doubts. And this clamor for certainty has infected the rest of our culture, too. Everyone's got their theory about what we're supposed to do. And everyone acts like they're sure they're right about it. How to parent, how to shop, what to eat, what we should do about poverty, taxes, roads, healthcare, education, everything under the sun. Ambiguity makes us nervous. We don't want to be wrong. And we think that if we study something enough, maybe the ambiguity will go away. Ambiguity thus has a paralyzing effect on us. We don't act at all for fear of making the wrong step. But ambiguity is real. We're not gods and we don't know everything, let alone what will happen as a consequence of what we do. Our lives and thus our choices are finite and provisional. There are surprises. If we wish to be people who do the good, then we are going to have to be comfortable with ambiguity. We can try and change the habit of our culture, or at least resist that habit. So, repeat after me, if you will. I don't know for sure. But I'm going to do my best. And if it doesn't work, I'll try something else. Just repeat that to yourself over and over again, and it will help. Let me give you an example from my own life. About 15 years ago, after learning some things about climate change and deforestation and water pollution, I decided I didn't want to participate in the burning of the Brazilian rainforest to make grazing land for beef cattle. And I didn't want to participate in the pollution of rivers and groundwater or methane emissions from large factory farms for cattle or pigs. So about 15 years ago, I stopped eating beef and pork. Now, I have friends who think I haven't gone far enough. They don't eat any animals at all. And maybe my friends are right, and maybe I should go farther than I have. But I know myself, and I know that I just couldn't do it. I don't like vegetables enough to be a vegetarian. I know that the choice I make isn't perfect. It's a compromise with our culture and my own personality. And though my choice isn't perfect, I know it also makes a difference. Because of that choice, I, as an individual, produce far less carbon emissions than 90% or more of Americans. So it helps. And when I think it's not perfect, I remember a well-known ethical injunction. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. This attitude, embracing ambiguity, trying tentative solutions, being willing to adjust, not letting the perfect be the enemy of the good, this attitude is essential to doing the good, to living the good life. It's the only way, since we are always finite, and since the world isn't static, but dynamic. When we leave the perfect behind, then it becomes a lot easier to make coalitions, groups of folks who are not the same but can work together anyway. It becomes easier to stay in community with others, be snowflakes together, since nobody is exactly the same. And it becomes easier to practice that most essential ethical virtue, empathy. To imagine what it might be like to be different, to have different values and priorities, hopes and fears, and thus build a world where people in their plurality can live together in peace. Doing good by embracing ambiguity means doing the best we can, even when we're not sure about what we should do. But there are also times when we know what we want to do, but find it hard to do so. St. Paul put it this way about 2,000 years ago, I do not want what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. I can will what is right, but I cannot do it. For I do not the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I do. St. Paul has a theological explanation for this phenomenon about sin being in your flesh and so on and so forth. But regardless of the explanation, I think most of us recognize the reality of it. Sometimes it's like this. We will what is right, but we can't do it. We don't want to do X, Y, or Z, but we do. We don't want to spend our lives, our time, our money, drinking, smoking, gambling, eating more than we should, using pornography. We don't want to do these things, don't want to be betrayed by our compulsions, but we are. Here's a quick survey. If you know someone who has struggled with addiction, addiction of any kind, whether that person is you, your spouse, your children, your parents, your siblings, a friend or a coworker, and whether that person is in recovery or not, if you know someone who has struggled with addiction, raise your hand. Every single hand, right? Addiction is common, very common. Some of us have struggled personally, others have seen others close to us struggle with addiction or with the after effects of having grown up in families where addiction of some kind was present. And we could give lots of explanations. St. Paul's theological one, sure, or also biochemical, a high followed by a low that needs another high, and economic, about how pushers and peddlers and profiteers take advantage of addictions to make money, and emotional, about how these things are used to fill the empty places in our lives, in our hearts, to ease the pain and cover the scabs of our imperfection. Whatever the explanation, what is sure is that addictions can make it hard to do the good. When addictions get out of control or they take over, they harm our relationships with others, prevent the kind of empathetic imagination that we need to see how others experience our own actions. Others become either a means to an end or an obstacle to that end. Addictions pull us away from the beautiful life. What's the solution? It isn't easy. You've got to look at the root cause, the feeling of emptiness, the fear, the family history, the social context. But you've also got to address the symptom, the behavior caused by the addiction, especially if the behavior harms others. I know some Unitarian Universalists resist 12-step programs because they don't like the higher power language. But almost all the people who I know who are in recovery, instead of in the thrall of addiction, did it through a 12-step program, including lots of atheists and Unitarian Universalists. The important part isn't that you believe in a particular kind of higher power, but that you recognize that you need some help. And if you want to understand the higher power, to translate it into the spirit of life which is manifest in the universe itself, embodied through human lives and hearts, that'll work just fine. Remember what we said about ambiguity. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Don't let language differences get in the way of becoming healthier. Don't give up on yourself. People do conquer addictions. They do it every day. They enter recovery and they work hard to stay there, and they do. Many of you have done just that, and it's work. It's not easy, but it can be done. Others, and it depends on the addiction, since, for example, an alcoholic can give up alcohol, but someone with an eating addiction still has to eat. Others learn to manage their addictions. They become self-conscious of the highs and lows, aware of the triggers, and have coping strategies to avoid the downward spiral. Management is work too. It's a lot of work. The good news is that the things it usually takes to conquer addictions, things like finding other ways to be happy, friends you can count on when you need help, self-awareness, self-forgiveness, self-discipline, these kinds of things, when you develop them, can also make it easier to do the good in your life. You get more clarity about what your life is for, how we need one another, how to be at peace with yourself, so that goodness can be cultivated in wider and wider circles. Addictions are sometimes described as demons, as something to fight against, as our adversary. That may be true, but they're also real adversaries, real people who for various reasons stand in the way of our efforts to do the good or pull us in the wrong direction or seem with everything they do to undo everything we do. I'm talking about the folks who fight against everything we're for and are for everything we're against. I'm talking about the folks who make our blood boil or make us just want to give up because we don't want to fight, because we don't like ourselves when we're around these adversaries. I'm talking about the folks who befuddle us, who perplex and agitate us because we just don't see how anyone can think that way. When you work for justice, you'll have adversaries. When you try to change things, you'll upset people. When you try to do good in the world, some are going to say, that's not the way. And they might try to stop you, maybe head to head, or more likely through passive-aggressive sabotage. You might have adversaries in your more personal struggles to do good, the relative who fights with you, the coworker who undercuts you, the backstabbing once-upon-a-time friend. Adversaries are tough to deal with. The worst part is that they distract you and take you off your game. You focus on them instead of doing your best. They make you lose your temper and your focus. And when you sink down to their level, then they win. I have an adversary in town. His name is Kevin, and he doesn't like me very much. He badgers me every time he sees me at a rally for equality or for freedom, and he's even badgered me last week outside of Pride Fest when I had my kids with me and I told him to leave me alone. Kevin doesn't like me very much, and I don't like him very much either. Makes me lose my center and my temper. When I lose my temper, he wins. I'm not firmly planted in the Tao. I cannot make goodness in the world because I'm not making goodness in my own life. The solution to adversaries is to plant yourself firmly in the spirit, to cultivate peace and wholeness in your heart, for you will need that spiritual center. And the solution is to make allies, lots of allies, millions of snowflakes working together. I'll engage folks who are sincere and civil any day of the week in conversation, deep discussion of our differences and similarities, but I'm not going to engage bullies, jerks, and folks who only seek to make trouble. It's not good for my soul, and it doesn't make a difference. To make my vision of the world come true, I don't need to convince adversaries. I don't. I need to convince folks who are on the fence, who want to know more, who are willing to listen. I don't believe in Satan, but I agree with Jesus' instructions to Satan after the temptations of power and wealth have been resisted and the commitment to the Spirit reinforced. After all that, Jesus says, "Get thee behind me." And I agree with that. Next time Kevin yells at me, that's going to be my reply. Get thee behind me. I'll see how he reacts to that. And then I'll turn away and walk away and plant myself back in the Tao and stay planted there. Living the life of goodness isn't always easy. It's easy sometimes. It's easy when it's clear, but it's not always clear. And in the face of ambiguity, we must remember to be humble, to do our best, to try again when we need to. Doing good is easy when we're not trapped by addictions, but sometimes we are. But addictions can be overcome when we lean on one another and fill the empty parts of our lives with things worthy of our love. Doing good is easy when nobody opposes us, but sometimes we have adversaries. We need to put them behind us. Stay centered in the spirit of life and remember always that we are not alone. Listen to your conscience. Be the snowflake. Stay rooted in goodness. It can be done. It will make the world better. It really will. How do I know this? By watching. For this, doing good with others in the presence of the holy, this has made the world better, time and time again. May we this day resolve ourselves again to live our best lives and to be glad in them. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. We're going to sing hymn number 128 in your gray hymnal, For All That Is Our Life.